Last week we talked about joy, deep, profound kind of a joy that's different than any other kind of any joy that most people ever experience. It's such a powerful kind of joy that it actually makes you feel good and have happiness and joy, even in times of severe suffering. And it comes through loving God. That's kind of the summary of last week. And I asked last week for you to spend the week focusing your attention on two verses, Psalm 27:4 and Psalm 73:25. So Psalm 27:4 is this: "One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple." One desire I have. I only have one desire in my whole life, and that is to see God and gaze on his beauty, to be in his presence and to see his beauty. Psalm 73:25 says, "Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." Earth has nothing I desire besides you. Nothing. Does that sound far-fetched to anyone else, this idea of I only have one desire? Do you suppose that was really true of Asaph? He only had one desire. He didn't desire anything else, just God. You think... I mean, I read these verses, and I think, to me, they seem like hard verses. Did David really seek after nothing on earth except to dwell in the temple and look at God's beauty? Was it true that Asaph didn't have any other desire? I mean, he had no desire for a meal when he was hungry, no desire for water when he was thirsty, or a good night's sleep when he was tired, no desire for money, no desire for friends. Do you think that's true of Asaph? No. Actually, he did have other desires. I know that for sure, because earlier in the psalm, he confesses his sins. For example, in verse 3, he says, "For I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." You know what that means? He says, I was jealous of people when they were rich, wicked people when they got rich. What does that mean as far as his desires? What did he desire? Yeah, he desired money. Verse 4 says, "They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong." That means he desired...
be healthy
and strong. Yeah, a healthy, strong body. Verse 12, "This is what the wicked are like. Always carefree. They increase in wealth." So he desired wealth and relief from his worries. He had plenty of desires. But as he progressed farther and farther in the psalm, and he kept writing the psalm, he realized that none of those things are worthy objects of his ultimate desire. Because none of those things can really satisfy, ultimately satisfy. When he gave it a little more thought, he realized that these people that had those things aren't really in such a great position. They're not to be envied. There's no reason to be jealous of those people. They're actually to be pitied, because verse 16 says, "When I tried to understand all this, when I tried to understand why the wicked have it so well, it was oppressive to me." It means it drove me crazy, bothered me, bugged me, "until I entered the sanctuary of God, and then I understood their final destiny. I realized where they were going. And then I wasn't jealous of them one bit. Surely you placed them on slippery ground, God. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly they are destroyed and completely swept away by terrors." There's nothing to envy about them. So all these wonderful things that they have, though there's money and comfort and health and everything, don't bring ultimate joy. Those people are destined for horrible things, and they should be pitied and not envied. Verse 21, he says, "When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant." What he's saying there is, I was stupid to be jealous of them. Verse 23, "Yet I'm always with you, God. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterward you will take me into glory." So he realizes sin and repents. He also realizes that even while he had these sinful attitudes, God was near him. God didn't leave him during that time. And then the fog of his mind finally clears up, and he sees the truth. He sees what he really wants. In fact, he sees the only thing that's really even worth wanting, and that is to have God be near you. When he realizes, "Oh God, you were near me that whole time," he realizes, you know what? That's the only thing that's really worth anything anyway. So then that's when he writes, verse 25, "Whom have I in heaven but you, and earth has nothing I desire besides you." Now that's not to say he went the whole rest of his life and never slipped back into the evil desires again, into those sins. It just means that at moments like this, when he's in his right mind, he realizes that there's nothing desirable in existence except God. He's committed to... that's right. He's committed to only desire God. Now let's talk about this for a little while, because this is something you need to understand. There's one sense in which we can say all desire is really a desire for God. Because the desirability of all things derives from God's goodness. Does everybody understand that statement? When I say the desirability of all things derives from God's goodness, you know what I mean by that? The thing that makes something desirable, that is, the thing that makes you want some good thing, whatever's good about it that you want, that reflects God's goodness. The reason you want it is because it's something about, there's something about it that's like God. That's why you want it. The reason a donut tastes so good is because God designed that thing to reflect something about his own goodness and his own desirability. Same thing goes for a milkshake, right? Or anything that's good. That's why soft pillows feel good on your head. There's something about them that reflects something that's good about the goodness of God. It's why Xboxes are fun to play with. It's why it's enjoyable to watch the power of a huge lightning storm. It's why skiing is exciting. It's why you hang out with friends is fun. All those things, the reason you desire those things is because there's something about those things that reflects something about God's goodness. Every pleasure that exists is pleasurable because it's designed by God to carry an illustration or an example of something about his goodness. Do you understand that? That's really important. The only reason an Xbox is fun is because it has something in it that's like the goodness of God, some reflection of the glory of God. And that's the part of it that you desire. If God were not good, there would be no such thing as pleasure. Got that? If God were not good, there would be no such thing as pleasure. First, God designed the human soul to enjoy, enjoy Him and to be thrilled by Him. And then He invented a million little pleasures, like milkshake and donuts and Xboxes and skiing and shopping and friends and everything else, to serve as pictures of His goodness, so that we can understand how desirable He really is, how exciting He really is, how beautiful He really is, how satisfying He really is. And in one sense, you say, well, wait a minute, what about evil desires? Are those really ultimately a desire for God? In one sense, I would say yes. Even evil desires are really desires for good that reflects God's goodness. The problem is that they have been twisted or perverted into a perverted state or attached to some sin. See, so all my evil desires that I have in my heart are really desires for something that if I waited on God for that thing and I sought God alone for that desire, I would eventually receive fulfillment in much greater measure than if I try and get it through sin. Because there's two ways to fulfill a desire. Either through the flesh or through faith in the promise of God. And that's one thing we learn in the life of Abraham. Paul teaches us this in Galatians. He uses Abraham as an example. God promised Abraham a son, and Abraham really wanted that son. He had a desire to have this son. And the problem was that the son didn't come, and Abraham and his wife got to be older and older, and pretty soon they're too old, way too old to have a baby. So Sarah's too old. She's past childbearing age, and so it's impossible for her to get pregnant. Abraham still wants to have this baby, and so he decided to take matters into his own hands. God had promised him the son. He promised him he's going to have a son. So he takes matters into his own hands and to get the son that he wanted through sin. And so he slept with Hagar, a younger woman that he wasn't married to, and ends up getting a son through her. Well, God rebuked him for doing that. That was the wrong way to do it. What he should have done was what? Wait. Yeah, trust in God and wait for God to fulfill his promise. Abraham's desire for a son was a good thing, but his decision to fulfill that desire the wrong way was a sin. So when we have sinful desires, we need to realize any kind of desire, whether it's sinful desire, good desire, any kind of desire, we need to realize that at the core of that desire is a desire for something good. But if we try and get that good thing through sin, number one, it's not going to ultimately satisfy you, because only God can satisfy desire. And number two, there's going to be terrible consequences, like there always are with sin. But if we just wait on God and look to Him to fulfill our desires, then He'll do it. That's what the Scripture means when it keeps on saying, wait on God, wait on the Lord. So, suppose you're tempted to lie. You want to make up a story to impress people to make yourself look better than you really are. That's why we lie. So what's the desire? The desire is really a desire to be praised and honored, right? That's why you're doing it. But if you try and fulfill that desire through sins, like lying or showing off or bragging or talking about yourself all the time or something like that, then of course that's wrong. Those are all sins because they show that what you really want is praise from people, honor from people. You care more about what people think than what God thinks. Now, it's not wrong to want to be honored. That desire is not a bad thing. But what you should do is seek that from God instead of from people. So instead of being like Abraham and fulfill your desire right now through sin, you wait for God, and you know what happens? 1 Corinthians 4:5. Wait till the Lord comes. He will bring to light what is hidden in darkness and will expose the motives of men's hearts, and at that time each one of you will receive his praise from God. You ever seen that verse before? Did you know God is going to praise you? Do you know that? 1 Corinthians 4:5. God is going to praise you when you get to Judgment Day. You're going to be honored. But you need to, and so the desire for honor is not a bad thing. It's only bad if you seek it from the wrong source. If you seek fulfillment from people instead of from God. So there's one sense in which all desire starts out good. However, the Bible does talk about evil desires. There is such a thing as an evil desire. Even though all desire is ultimately for God's goodness, there's such a thing as evil desire. And the thing that makes a desire evil is when the object of your desire is something other than God. Ultimately. That's the beginning of idolatry. Idolatry, or idol worship, is the most basic sin of the human heart. That's the most basic sin, I think, of the human heart. Idolatry is when you worship created things instead of God. And desire is an important part of worship. Most people don't think they're guilty of idolatry because they've never bowed down in front of a statue. But bowing down isn't the most essential part of worship. The most essential part of worship is desire. We worship God by looking to Him to satisfy our desires. Whatever you look to satisfy your desires, that's who you're worshiping, or that's what you're worshiping. Because nothing glorifies or honors someone more than desire. Let me show you what I mean by that. If you really want to honor somebody and make that person look good, what's the best way to do it? Just by praising the person or by desiring the person? And if you to answer that question, think about it backwards. Imagine somebody's talking about you. You're not there, and they're talking about you behind your back. And they say, she's pretty, and she's smart, and she's a really good person. And someone says, well, do you want to hang out with her? No. No. I'd rather stay home and clip my fingernails or whatever, you know. Do you want to be friends with her? Absolutely not. You want to talk to her? Well, I guess I have enough self-discipline to force myself to talk to her for a little while. But I don't really want to. Now, if they're talking about you that way, the person praised you, said you're pretty, you're smart, you're fun, whatever. Did that honor you? No, it didn't really honor you much, did it? Because they don't desire you. What if someone else is talking about you, and they find out that you're coming over, and as soon as they find out you're coming over, they get really excited, and they say, oh, I can't wait, she's coming, that's awesome. I can't wait till she gets here. I mean, I love being around her. Okay, where do you meet her? You're wherever. Now that would honor you, right? If they had that reaction. So praise is good if it comes out of desire, but praise without desire doesn't really honor God. When you praise God, but you have no desire for Him, it doesn't really honor Him very much. What really honors Him the most is when you desire Him. That's why I say desire is an important component of worship. Because you lift up as important whatever you desire most. If you desire music most, then you lift that up as the most important, desirable, good thing. If you desire some sin most, or food most, or rest most, or friends most, or God most, whatever it is that you exalt the most in your life is going to be that thing that you desire the most. The best compliment you could ever give a restaurant would be to say, man, if I could go eat there, I'd be the happiest person alive, right? It has to do with desire. The best compliment you could give a person would be to say, if I had one wish, it would be to be around that person. And the greatest praise that you can give God is to say, the only thing I desire is to be in His presence and to be telling the truth. So, when we look at created things to satisfy our desires, that's idolatry. We're worshiping the created thing. We're giving worship to that created thing by desiring it that much. And I was thinking of that this week, just kind of as a side note, about why God allows evil desires. I mean, why didn't God make it so all our desires were good desires? And I think one reason why He allowed evil desires is so that we can worship. You know, when you face a temptation, you really have a wonderful opportunity at that moment to glorify God. That's a great gift from God. Because every time you have a temptation to sin, that's a chance for you to say, you know what? I desire fellowship with God more than I desire that sin. And that glorifies God. In fact, the stronger the temptation, the more it glorifies God when you'd rather have Him. Right? So the stronger the temptation, the more chance you have to glorify God. That's the highest worship. Now, I don't know if you're following this train of thought here, but if you are, you're probably wondering this. You're probably thinking, okay, Daryl, you keep on saying that I can only desire God, and that if I desire things, it's idolatry. But I'm still stuck with, you know, the fact that I like food, I like sleep, I like skiing, I like shopping, whatever, and I mean, I enjoy these things. And I desire those things, so am I an idolater? Is it possible to desire and enjoy a created thing without committing idolatry? And I would say, yes, it is possible. It's not always wrong to enjoy the creation. There is a way to enjoy created things without committing idolatry, because God gave us the creation so that we would use it as a tool to enjoy Him. God gave us His creation, filled it with pleasures, so that we would use those as tools to enjoy Him. There are two ways to enjoy things in the world. If you use the creation to enjoy God, that's worship. If you enjoy the creation instead of God, that's idolatry. You understand the difference? If you use a donut to help you enjoy God, that is worship and it honors God. If you enjoy the donut instead of God, that's an evil sin, it's idolatry, and it dishonors God. Because it makes God look like He's not even as desirable as a donut. Right? If you use a ski trip or an Xbox to enjoy God, that's good. If you enjoy those things instead of God, that's idolatry. You see, everything God made carries a message from heaven. And this is the point that I want to get you to think about this week and concentrate hard on this, because this is something I want you to think about for the next 2 weeks. Everything God made, Xboxes, donuts, milkshakes, all of it, everything you desire, every bit of it carries a message from heaven. It's like a mailman carrying a letter from heaven. Now let me tell you about mail. The summer before Tracy and I got married, I was working in Colorado as a whitewater rafting guide. She was living in Minnesota, 1,000 miles away. That was right up until a couple days before we got married, so we were separated the whole summer. And this is before email existed. And cell phones. It was before cell phones existed. And so what we did was we hand wrote letters, stuck them in these paper containers, sealed them up, put a stamp on them, sent them off, and waited days for them to arrive at their destination. You can imagine such a process. Yeah, it was the Pony Express, and then we had to wait for the horses, you know, and all that. Now, so we're sending letters back and forth all summer. That's the only way we could communicate. We couldn't afford to talk long distance on the phone, so we just communicated through handwritten letters. And I got real excited when I saw the mailman coming. But it wasn't because I was in love with the mailman. You understand that? It was because of what he was bringing me. He was bringing me a message from the one I loved. That's why I was excited to see him coming. Right? Now, if I found out that Tracy got really excited every time she saw the mailman coming, would that make me happy? Well, it depends on why she's getting excited. If she's excited because of what he's bringing her from me, then yeah, that makes me happy. If she doesn't care about my letter, she's only excited because she's in love with a mailman, that doesn't make me happy. Now, here's what I want you to understand. Every pleasure on earth that isn't sin is a mailman carrying a letter from God. Okay? So think of the things that you desire, things that you like in life, things that you enjoy, things that you want. Whatever it is you can think of that you enjoy, that you like, think of that as a mailman carrying a message from heaven. So chocolate cake is like a mailman. How is chocolate cake like a mailman? The cake isn't from God. The message is from God. The letter. That's what the mailman carries, a message. Right? A little like a message. There's a message in that cake. There is. There's a message in that cake. There's a message from God about what he's like. What does the message say? What does the message say?
That he's good.
That he's good. Yeah, that he's pleasurable, that he's desirable. And that he can create things like chocolate cake to illustrate that. So, how many of you like to watch a really good sunset? Okay. So a sunset is like a mailman. How is a sunset like a mailman? It carries a message. Mailmen carry a message. Sunsets carry a message. What's the message? Well, who's the message from in the sunset?
God.
And what does it say? Yeah, that God is beautiful, that he's desirable, that this everything that you like about the sunset illustrates something that's good about God. So you get some new clothes or some new shoes or go on a family vacation or you spend a day at Waterworld or Illich's or you get some money or whatever. All those things are like a mailman carrying a message from your Father in heaven telling you about how good he is. All right. So one thing we need to train ourselves to do is to read the message. Not just focus on the mailman, but to focus on the message. And the message is, God says to you, I love you, and I created all kinds of pleasures for you to enjoy, and this particular pleasure of this bed or this chocolate cake or this friend or whatever is my expression of love to you. It's my way of showing my love to you. I'm good and I'm pleasurable and I'm satisfying, and to prove that, I've created all kinds of things like cake and beds and friends and shopping and shoes as examples of what it feels like to be satisfied by me. That's the message. That's what's in the letter. And you miss that if you only focus on the mailman and not the message. So, is it good or bad to get excited and to enjoy a ski trip? It depends.
If you're wanting to go to enjoy God.
That's right. How would it be bad? How would it be idolatry? It's idolatry if you enjoy the ski trip instead of enjoying God. It's a good thing if you enjoy God by enjoying the ski trip. And the way to do that is to pay attention to the message. The message, remember the ski trip is a mailman? Carrying a message from heaven that says, I love you, and this is what it's like, this is what it feels like to be satisfied by me. You're paying attention to that message, then the more fun you have on the ski trip, the more you're worshiping God. But if all you're thinking about is skiing and fun and not about God, you're worshiping the ski trip instead of God. You're looking at the ski trip like it's desirable instead of God being desirable. You're looking at the mailman, and you're in love with the mailman, and you're not paying attention to the letter that he's carrying to you from God. Does that make sense? That's exactly right. Every time you sin, it's idolatry because you're desiring a created thing more than you're desiring God. And that's why if you can develop this mindset, this is why I'm hammering this into your head, because if you can develop a way of thinking like this all through the day, then you're going to always be saying, this pleasurable thing, I'm going to enjoy God by enjoying this thing. And it works every time, and you find more and more joy in enjoying God because that's the only thing that truly satisfies. If you try and just satisfy your soul with a ski trip, it won't work. Remember, we talked about that last week. But if you satisfy your soul with God, then it does work. So you find yourself more satisfied and more satisfied and more joyful and more joyful, and then all of a sudden a sin comes along, some temptation to sin, and you realize, wait a minute, I can't enjoy God by doing this thing, and so you don't want to have any part of it. So your desires change, which is the only way to defeat sin. I'll give you another illustration. When I give my kids a gift at Christmas, do I want them to be excited or not? Yes, I do. The happier they are, the happier I am. However, if they get excited about those things without paying any attention to me, you know, if they tear open the gift and they turn their back to me, grab the gift, and go out and never talk to me again, then they miss the point of the gift. The gift is supposed to communicate love. But if they open the gift, their face light up, they turn towards me and run over and give me a big hug, then I'm glad they're excited about the gift. Because it's designed to be an expression of love. So, the other illustration I had was, if you could think about an engagement ring. When I gave Tracy her engagement ring, if I hand her the ring and she gets excited about it, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It depends. If she's excited about it, that's right. If she's excited about the ring only because she loves diamonds, she sees the diamonds, she loves diamonds, she grabs the ring, walks away, never talks to me again, then I'm not all that glad that she's excited about the ring. But if she's excited about the ring, not because of the diamonds, but because of what the ring meant, which is what? Yeah. That's right. That's what it means. And if that makes her happy, then I'm happy. That's what I want. I want her to be excited about the ring, but not because of the ring. But I want her to be excited about the ring because of what it means, that it means marriage to me. I want her to be happy and excited at that moment, but I want that happiness and excitement to be about the love I'm communicating to her. And that's the way God, all pleasure is like that. Every enjoyable thing in life is like getting a ring from God. Going on a ski trip, going on a fun vacation, eating your favorite dessert. That's like playing an Xbox, going to McDonald's, whatever. That's like getting a ring from God. You can see that, you can look at that like a proposal from God to enjoy His love. He's inviting you to come and enjoy His love. Or you can look at it and it's just a round piece of gold. If you get to play your favorite video game with your best friend, or you get to go shopping with your best friend and use your parents' credit card, or whatever pleasure you can think of, there's two ways to enjoy that. One is like getting a ring from God. Well, both of them are like getting a ring from God. If you just play the game or enjoy the shopping and walk away thinking, wow, that was really fun, without any thought at all, then you're like a woman who's just looking at the gold and the diamonds and you don't pay attention to what the ring means. Now, can you do that and have a happy life? Can you just go through life and enjoy skiing and enjoy all the things that you do and your hobbies and fun things and have a happy life? Well, you can have a little bit of happiness, but it can't bring anywhere near the kind of joy that we talked about last week, which is the kind of joy you need to satisfy your soul. God did not create your soul so small that it could be satisfied with earthly pleasures alone. He never created a soul that small. You'll never be satisfied by that. It seems like you will be if you just get a little bit more and a little bit more, and you never will be. That's why rich people who can buy anything they want are very often don't have the kind of joy that we were talking about last week. In fact, very often they commit suicide. Because they seek thrill after thrill, and they find that true joy is not coming into their life because they enjoy those things like a woman enjoying a gold ring without appreciating the proposal. They're not reading the message. They're just looking at the mailman. But if you see that fun thing as a proposal from God or a message from heaven telling you about what God is like, then those same things will start to bring you real joy. So now, finally, we can answer Carol and Nicole's question from last week. Last week I told you that your soul is kind of like your stomach. When you don't eat, your stomach shrinks. When you eat a lot, it stretches out, right? And your soul is like that. God designed you to only be satisfied with huge pleasures. He designed your soul that can only be satisfied with huge pleasures. Huge, huge pleasures. And I mean really huge, the kind that can only come through fellowship with God and enjoying His presence. No vacation in the world is a huge enough pleasure. The greatest, funnest vacation you can possibly dream of is only this big of a pleasure. And God created your soul needing this much pleasure. That's why you never feel satisfied. It's fun for a little while, but then it never really satisfies because your soul is this big and then pleasure is only this big. The only thing that will fill it is enjoying the presence of God. Now, when we go a long time without experiencing any huge pleasures, then it feels like your soul is kind of shrinking down, so these little small tiny pleasures seem like they're going to satisfy it. So you play a game, and you enjoy the game without paying attention to God, and it feels satisfying for a little while because your soul has shrunk down so small. But that doesn't keep you satisfied. In fact, eventually you would die spiritually if that's the only kind of joy you have. It's not enough to keep you going. When you look into the lives of the people that commit suicide, and they're doing all kinds of fun things, and then they end up committing suicide. So I told you what we want is to experience those huge pleasures that God designed for us so that we can stretch out our soul to handle even bigger pleasures. And when I said that last week, then Carol Nicole says, well, wait a minute, then you can't enjoy small things. Because she's thinking about the stomach illustration. You know, if you eat a lot of food and stretch out your stomach really big, then you can't eat just a couple little things and feel satisfied, right? You're still hungry. And so it seemed to her that what I was saying last week is, if you stretch out your soul really big, then little tiny pleasures, like playing a game or eating some food or something, aren't going to satisfy your soul. That's right. The answer is, once you stretch out your soul and experience huge pleasures, it's true that tiny little earthly things can never satisfy. However, there's never, ever a moment when all you have available is tiny pleasures. At every moment, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you have available to you huge pleasures. Because you have available to you fellowship with God and enjoyment of the presence of God at every moment. And so you can experience huge pleasures if you learn how to do it, which is what we're going to be talking about in the weeks to come. We're not going to talk about today, but in the weeks to come. If you learn how to do it, you can experience those huge pleasures all the time. See, it's not that playing a video game or eating a piece of candy is a small pleasure. Playing a video game or eating it could be a small pleasure or a huge pleasure depending on how you enjoy it. Whether you enjoy it just by itself or whether you enjoy it as part of your enjoyment of God. Does that make sense to everybody? So we need to learn. You get a piece of candy, you put it in your mouth, you just say, tastes good, and walk away. You missed out on huge pleasure, and you run the risk of committing idolatry by focusing on a created thing and making that the object of your pleasure. But if you look at that candy and say, this is a mailman carrying a message from heaven about how good God is, then you're going to you're going to sit there and think, God loved me enough to create these little special kind of pleasures, like this little piece of candy. And he's with me right now, smiling because I'm enjoying this candy that he gave me. And being with him is kind of like whatever enjoyment I'm getting from this candy. This is great. And you, at that moment, your soul has a little bit of pleasure at the thought that you're in the presence of God and that he's expressing that love to you. That's huge pleasure. And that's what's going to generate joy. If you do that hundreds of times a day, all through the day, over a period of time, that's going to generate that incredible, powerful joy that we talked about last week. And by the way, did you know that non-Christians and fake Christians can't take pleasure in God? They can think these things that we're talking about all day long, and they can think, oh, this thing's a mailman, and you know, it's a message from God, and this is God is with me right now, and he's giving me this pleasure, and their heart is a flat line. It does nothing to them. It doesn't make them feel one bit good. Because the unbeliever's heart is dead to God. If you have the capacity to have that little spark of joy when you think about these things, then that's evidence that you're saved. So you get this little piece of candy, you're thinking, or you know, whatever pleasure, and you're thinking, this is a ring from heaven inviting me to enjoy him. It is an example that he created to show me something about what the pleasure of his presence is like and what he's like. It's a little window that gives me a peek into heaven. And you start to get excited. It's a gift from him designed to show me his love for me. And I enjoy that candy or that thing and turn around and give him a big hug. And I respond in gratitude because of the expression of love that he gave to me. That's when you get the huge pleasure that will actually satisfy your soul. You ever seen a one-year-old open presents?
Yes, they're fed it on the box.
Yeah. Or the paper. They usually just want to play with the wrapping paper. A lot of times, little kids don't even notice what's in the box.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
just enamored with the paper. You know, when Carol Nicole was a baby, she used to love to chew on paper. And so instead of wasting money on presents, we started just giving her paper. Tracy laminated a piece of paper and she could chew on it all day long. She was happy. Now, when she was a baby, if I would have gone out and bought her a brand new Jeep and put the key in a box and wrapped it up, you know what she would have done? Chewed on the paper. She wouldn't have cared about the key. Key isn't as fun as chewing on the paper. Paper makes noise. She wouldn't even understand that the key has anything to do with the car. She would just see, what is this, and throw it and chew it. So, when God gives us, now that Nikki's getting close to being an adult, she's becoming an adult, she can understand the difference between the key and the paper. So if I went out today and bought her a brand new Jeep, and put the key in a box, and wrapped it in the paper, would she appreciate, if I did a good job wrapping it, would she appreciate the wrapping job? Probably. Would she say, oh, that's nice, you know, I'm glad you wrapped it up. Probably. But it would be, whatever joy she got out of that would be this much. And then when she opened it up, she saw the key, and it said Jeep on there. She looked outside and saw her in a Jeep. That joy would be a little bit bigger, right? When you enjoy some game or some pleasure on earth, some friendship, whatever, pleasure on earth, Without paying attention to God, you're just a baby chewing on paper. Even the greatest, funnest vacation you can imagine in your wildest dream, that's just wrapping paper. And what I want to try and do in the weeks to come in this class is teach you how to become an adult so that you can look inside the box and see that key and really get excited. Okay, so just to wrap this up, we need to... All of us are constantly tending towards idolatry. We're always wanting to enjoy the things of this life without paying any attention to God. The only way this is going to work, I guarantee you're never going to have the joy we talked about last week if all you do is come to youth group and you think about these things once a week or you think about them once or twice a day during your devotions. That will not do it. That will not produce this kind of joy in your heart. The rest of the day you just go through your normal thinking and then twice a day you have your little devotions and you think about these things. That's not near enough. Psalm 25:5 says, "Guide me in your truth and teach me, for you are God my Savior, and my hope is in you all day long." Only when your hope is in Him all day long will this work. Psalm 119:97, "Oh, how I love your law. I meditate on it all day long." Psalm 89:15, "Blessed are those who have learned to acclaim you, who walk in the light of your presence, O Lord. They rejoice in your name all day long." Did you know that God is extending His hands for fellowship with you all day long? Isaiah 65:2, "All day long I have held out my hands to an obstinate people." It's talking about Israel when they were turning against God. If God held out His hands to an obstinate, rebellious people all day long, how much more does He hold out His hands all day long to someone like you, His precious child, whom He loves? Psalm 71:8, "My mouth is filled with your praise, declaring your splendor all day long," night and day. So the question is this: how are you going to make yourself remember this principle all day long? And that's something that we're going to focus on in a big way in the weeks to come. But just for now, just to get you started, the goal is between now and 2 weeks from now when we meet again, for you to at least do it several times a day. Maybe not all day long, but at least more than once a day or twice a day, like 10 times a day. We'll start there. You get up to 100, 200, 300 times a day, then it'll be constant, and that's when that real joy is going to fill up your heart. But let's just start and see if we can get there to like 10 times a day between now and next week, or next 2 weeks from now. So what we need is something that you see in your day-to-day life that will work as a memory cue to remind you to think about this principle. And one thing I thought of was mail. So if you see a mailman, if you see a mail truck, if you see a mail box, if you see mail, a stamp, a letter, an envelope, anything that has anything to do with mail, then I want you to stop and I want you to think about this. Think about, oh, what was the last pleasure that I enjoyed? And what's the next desire that I have? And think about, am I paying attention to the message from heaven? Am I looking inside the box? You understand that? Do you think that'll be enough to get you to 10 times a day? You think you see male paraphernalia 10 times a day? The other time is anytime you enjoy something. Anytime you think, find yourself thinking, wow, I love this. I love this. Or like you're really comfortable, or you're eating something really good, or you're...
Yeah, sugar. I have six cavities.
Yep. So every time you find yourself enjoying something, then let that remind you, oh, am I looking inside the box, or am I just chewing on the paper? Okay? Well, let me give you a third one. You all, by the way, when you were babies, preferred to chew on paper instead of look at a present. That's the way all babies are. I've seen a lot of babies. Yeah. Babies like to play with paper. How about one more? Every time you have an unfulfilled desire, how many of you have a desire right now that it's not fulfilled? You wish you had it, you don't have it. Anybody? Oh, amazing. I would have never guessed. Okay, every time you think of that unfulfilled desire, remind yourself, that desire is really a desire for the goodness of God in some way, which I can have. Maybe not in the way that I want over here, but I can have it. I can have the goodness of God in some other way, in the way that God thinks is best. All right, so that's three things that are going to serve as reminders to you. Every time you see a mail thing, something that is mail, every time you enjoy something, and every time you desire something.